Do a roll call, please.
Chair Page.
Here.
Vice Chair Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Lieberman.
Here.
Regent McAdoo.
Here.
Regent Moran. Regent Trachok. Here. You have a quorum present.
Thank you. We go to item number one, public comment. Any public comment? If there is, please state your name and spell it for the record. We're not videoed, right? Okay, see no public comment. We will close public comment. Go to item number two, minutes. Any discussion? Motion for approval. Regent Trachok, second by Regent McAdoo. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, going to item number three, chair's report. Wanted to make a note of the announcement last week about the $155 million that's being raised, or has been raised, for the UNLV School of Medicine, and thank all the people involved with that. We will go to item number four, UNR School of Medicine report. Dean Swank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Health Sciences Committee. Tom Schwenk for the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. Thank you for the opportunity to go first so I can pop over to audit after this. You have my usual outline, which I would like to embellish a bit here and there. I would say, in general, it's all good news. Let me start at the top with some general issues. We have started the process of recruiting a senior associate dean for clinical affairs, and the reason I highlight this, it's because part of our strategic plan is a major commitment to growing our clinical platform, moving into the community, being more community engaged with regard to our clinical activities. I have served in this role of Dean of Clinical Affairs on an interim basis now for several years as we work through the transition from Las Vegas and settled into Reno, and it's time now to really have someone more fully devoted to that. So we will be launching a national search for that position fairly soon. Much farther along and just about completed is the recruitment of the Associate Dean for Biomedical Research. Without having a fully signed document, I'm not going to go into much detail, but I will just say that we have, I believe, all but concluded the negotiations with an outstanding candidate, a neuroscientist coming from a very prominent institution, who's going to bring tremendous leadership to our biomedical research activities, and it's a very exciting recruitment, and I will have more specific details in March. I wanted to highlight item 1C just a bit, related again to our clinical platform development. We are working very hard to connect with the Northern Nevada business community, the Corporate Giving Council, other entities to really help the community understand what it means to have a medical school in the community, what it means to have a full-time school in the community, how we contribute not just to sort of the obvious workforce development in other areas, but a whole host of ways that we develop a value proposition for the business community in Northern Nevada. And we believe that's very important, and we believe that there's tremendous receptivity by a number of prominent leaders and organizations, so that's going very well. And that brings me then to 1D, more generally, that we continue to develop our strategic plan with the pillars related to clinical platform development, clinical research development, community engagement, and faculty recruitment to support all of that. I'm pleased to note that this initiative to really push the strategic plan and the core values that go with it has really taken hold, and people now are regularly referring to this vision and this this map, if you will, for where we're headed, and it helps tremendously in making decisions. We connect plans from all of our departments to the strategic plan, and that helps. Item two, under medical education, I want to highlight 2A. This is an update from my comments last time that have to do with the United States Medical Licensing Exam, USMLE Step 1. which is a source of enormous stress for medical students across the country. It's a national issue with regard to this exam. And the reason I bring it back here is because we have done a whole host of things to change the curriculum, to link the curriculum more tightly to the examination, to link our evaluation and testing methods with the exam's testing methods, and to have study guides and support to go with that. And the reason I mention that is because it's on your list of fees, of the many, many fees that will be approved somewhere in the course of the meeting. Buried in there are fees related to significant investment in support materials and testing materials and other ways to enhance our student success. Highlight the admissions process, not in terms of numbers because we're still in the middle of the season, but just to say that we've implemented a whole host of new approaches to communication, to outreach, to cultivation of candidates, to interview techniques, to ways that we bring our interview groups into the school. And I just wanted to highlight how well some of our new leadership in that area is doing. Item three, graduate medical education. I want to highlight in particular Northern Nevada Medical Center. We're coming off a meeting literally yesterday with the leadership of Northern Nevada Medical Center. This is, as you know, is a universal health hospital corporate system that has a number of hospitals in Las Vegas and then a hospital in Reno. And that hospital broke ground a couple months ago on a new major hospital that'll be in the south part of Reno. We are deeply engaged with them in a number of collaborations, including new residency programs in family medicine and internal medicine that we think will start to get some traction very soon, but also clinical partnerships, faculty recruitment partnerships. It's really an exciting new venture that I think will enhance our success in the area. B actually refers to the larger issue of our relationship to Renown. We continue to be very engaged with Renown on a number of initiatives. Most recently, we're looking at some integration of our obstetrical care with Renown and also looking at some clinical research developments. But again, I would emphasize, relative to my previous comments about Northern Nevada, we are very clear with all of our partners. These are very high-level relationships, but they're not exclusive. And we are working very hard to be Switzerland to everyone in the area and looking for every possible way to grow our academic enterprise. That relates to something not on the list that I want to add, and that is our partnership with the VA. As you remember from last time, we are exploring a very high-level integrated partnership with the VA. Again, not exclusive, but the possibility that when the VA explores a replacement hospital project and talks about a new academic or new medical center, they're talking about a new academic medical center in which the school would actually have a structured part. And that's going to take a whole host of discussions about partnerships between the state and federal government. But the director of the VA is pursuing this at the highest levels, and there's tremendous interest in a partnership that does not now exist in the country. There are lots of ways that medical schools partner with the VA, but not in as integrated a fashion. So that's very exciting. And I'll just note under 3C, conversations that I just had 5 minutes ago with Regent McAdoo, that we continue to work very hard to develop the Elko campus. It's not easy. Small communities, small medical communities are hard places to work sometimes, but we are making progress. I think the operation is going in general well, but not to say there isn't more to do. Item four, the whole host of issues. I don't know if we have a slide up on our logo and our branding, but we have launched the brand of University Health. And you saw this, at least informally, in the past with a block N and University Health. Some of you will recall a previous branding exercise called University Health System, which is the right name but was impossible to brand because of two campuses, North and South. It wasn't a real winning strategy to put the block N on University Health in Las Vegas. So we have had now the opportunity to really more clearly tie our clinical practice branding and logo with the University of Nevada, Reno, and that's a very positive activity.
Dean Swank?
Yes.
Did you guys brand that internally, or did you hire someone to brand it?
We did that internally. We did surveys across the community and did a lot of brainstorming and creativity. We have, a very high-level creative staff that did this.
Thanks.
Item B, ACO participation. Just wanted to highlight that we have joined the Silver State ACO, which is a statewide ACO, north and south. A little heavier in the south for the moment, likely to become much heavier in the north. We think we have some very high quality scores to contribute to that, and that will be another way for us to engage in the community. 745 Moana, you know, is the building in on Moana Lane that we bought, and we're going through fundraising to develop renovation plans that will likely open probably roughly a year from now, maybe a bit short of that, sometime late summer, early fall. That'll be an integrated primary care practice. But before that even gets going, first out of the gate is the Plumas facility. This is a facility that we have leased for our internal medicine practice. They moved 2 weeks ago, moved off of the renowned campus, lock, stock, and barrel with residents, faculty members, educational programs, and everything into this new facility. The move was managed extremely well by our clinical operations leaders and by the Department of Internal Medicine. Tremendous positive reception by patients, by residents, by faculty members, by staff. It was really a model for how to close down on a Friday and reopen on a Monday. It was done extremely well. Probably the downside of that relates to item G, and that is our practice plan is a bit in a deficit at the moment, but it's one-time transition costs mostly for internal medicine that we think will recover by the end of the year. Item E,
Dean Swank, please. A little bit of a deficit would be what dollar amount?
A few hundred thousand. Transition costs for medicine closing down, losing some productivity along the way.
100,000, 200,000, 300,000?
500.
Okay.
But not unexpected for the move. I guess I should explain further. We did two transitions. One was to separate from Renown on July 1st, and then 4 months later we moved the office physically, and that's hurt, no question about it.
Thank you.
Item E, on consent and BFF, this lease was approved for a new very small office on the northwest side of town to serve the Somerset area in maternal and child health care. And F, I'll just highlight again that we are basically developing partnerships with everybody. Carson Tahoe is particularly lively at the moment. St. Mary's has tremendous possibilities. Northern Nevada, I've already talked about. The Reno Behavioral Hospital, which is a private psychiatric hospital, has been very positive. Lots going on there. And I'll finish with research under item A. I'll just highlight Regent Lieberman's very kind welcoming of Dr. Ryan Werbels to the Diversity Committee. Last hour, who presented on his experience with a type of muscular dystrophy and his research in that area. The reason I highlight that is because that project itself is really taking off. Tremendous fundraising, lots of influx of donor support to support their activities. Moving into clinical trials, it's really become a really high-level program for us. And I'll conclude talking about clinical research. Dr. Mark Riddle, our new Dean of Clinical Research, in his joint appointment at the VA, has really taken hold with a number of initiatives that will begin to develop a clinical research platform. And that constitutes my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Dean Swank? Seeing none. Thank you, Dean Swank.
Thank you.
We will go to the University School of Medicine report. Dr. Fowles.
Good morning, and thank you for having me for this report today. I'd like to start by saying that my comments will be broken into these five general areas. So to begin with our undergraduate medical education efforts, the class application size is now at 1792 with 266 from Nevada. This is three times what it was in the first year. I'd like you to look at the distributions for in-state, out-of-state, veterans, first generation, and rural. We think that those are quite robust. And our demographics compared to other public medical schools in the United States are at or generally above levels of diversity. Before leaving education, I'll say that our GME programs are really quite strong and well-subscribed. We are in interview season right now, and applications will be made by these graduating students with announcements for residency matching, usually coming in on St. Patrick's Day in March. And also at this time, I've directed all of our clinical chairs to begin targeting space in all of the residencies for our first graduating class that will graduate a year from May. Under faculty affairs, we're working with a major grant to look at health issues in Southern Nevada. To that point, development of things like the Ackerman Autism Center, bioethics, and our clerkship programs have been enriched, and our discussions with the funder have been quite positive, and it looks as though there'll be ongoing support in those areas. We brought our first cycle of faculty promotions to the Promotion and Tenure Committee and performed as we thought we should, and we're proud of those faculty that have been advanced and are helping those to recycle applications for the next year. We have not had an awards program yet because we've been a young school, but with our third class in session in May, we will have the first ever awards ceremony. We're trying to sync it with the meeting of the regents. So there'll be more information on that. But it's only reasonable that we begin to recognize the best students in certain programs and outstanding faculty and other sorts of individuals. And I see no need to wait until we graduate our first class to do that. We have hired a new chair of pediatrics, and she is working very hard and has been a real force. She's dynamically reshaping the Department of Pediatrics. There'll be more on that. We've also attracted two basic scientists, one in physiology, one in anatomy, to help build out our first two-year curriculum. And it's a pleasure to tell you that our director of diversity, who is Benita Wolf, was accepted for a fellowship at Harvard University, and she will be returning to us in an expanded role to take care of all efforts in diversity across all platforms in undergraduate, graduate medical education, and faculty affairs. We've also hired a new director of development who is orienting today and should be on the job within 2 weeks. Under research.
Dean?
Yes.
Do you do a development person? Are they local or they came from somewhere in-house, in within UNLV, outside of UNLV, in the Las Vegas community?
The individual is from outside the community but has worked in several metropolitan areas and has worked in efforts in schools very much like ours.
Thank you.
The Western Region meeting for major grants were attended here. Most noteworthy, though, is the second annual research forum where students and faculty, particularly from all clinical departments, presented, and the integration with main campus, particularly schools of engineering, Institute of Personalized Medicine, School of Public Health, are notable. We are really blending well and working well across all of the schools and departments with main campus. We also sent our faculty for training in clinical research and are starting to develop their grant proposals as we speak. I'll speak a little bit on the Las Vegas Medical District. As you know, a $155 million gift was received, and details are starting to come forth on the construction of a medical education building in the medical district. We're quite excited about that. And at the same time, we've co-located more of our practices in the district and have grown our profile, our footprint in the district significantly. I'm going to let Dr. Gardner talk more about our clinical affairs and finances, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Any questions with you?
And I'll happily return to the podium after this presentation.
Thank you, Dean.
Good morning. For the record, Michael Gardner, Vice Dean, Clinical Affairs. A couple things we just, as far as announcements or updates, we've implemented a weekly revenue cycle One of that's to teach our faculty to improve their skills. They have gotten better, but there's always room for improvement as far as coding, billing, and we always have new faculty, new residents. They're coming on board, so we do constant education. In the same vein, we have submitted our compliance plan to NSHE. So far, we've received good reviews, for lack of a better word, about our compliance plan, and that's being rolled out with NSHE approval and support. Vince Temples, who's our compliance officer, has led that and is doing a really outstanding job with that. In that vein, before I forget, I wanted to thank Joe Reynolds and Elda and other people. Two items from now, you're going to we're going to be going over the practice plan modifications of the bylaws. Since I won't be speaking on that, I wanted to thank them for all their hard work for that. They've been really very, very helpful, and we greatly appreciate it. One, just as a side, the Masters of Healthcare Administration program is outstanding at UNLV. Chris Cochran and his group do some great work. I think by now I'm actually now have an administrative faculty appointment in the School of Public Health, and I'm going to be in that department to help out at no cost. We're actually taking several of their Masters of Healthcare Administration students and putting them to work as interns in the practice plan. If you think about it, in Las Vegas, getting people with bachelor's level education, soon to have master's level education, to work for you for free is a pretty sweet deal. So we're also looking at getting some of the undergrads that are getting bachelor's in healthcare administration to do some other capstone projects and things with us. So we've the first eight just finished their first semester with us. We'll probably have a few more in the spring semester, and we've been really excited about that. The second page, as far as our consolidated statement, as you know, we turn in things very, very early. So this is the August through August, so 2 months. Obviously, since then we have, we've moved along. But this was when the deadline for this meeting was. At that point in time, the year-to-date actual was $1.2 million in deficit. We had budgeted $800,000 in deficit, so we're $400,000. Off the four departments, so the four areas that are causing them the most concern. Dr. Files alluded to pediatrics. That's our biggest money loser. And our new chair has jumped in with both feet as recently as yesterday gave us an action plan that we're going to work through her, a combination. We're changing some of our contracts with UMC, as well as, frankly, we're having some faculty adjustments. And that'll decrease some faculty salaries as we're redoing how we're doing the UMC hospitalist service. That will help with that. Our second biggest loss is the Ackerman Center, the Autism Center, but our friends in Grant a Gift have been, so that's based on what you're seeing in the revenue. The good news is that since this has been put out, between now and the end of the month, they will have given us an extra $350,000 of grant aid that's not booked on this. And we're expecting approximately $500,000 grant support from them or philanthropy support from them in the first half of calendar year 2020. The Grant a Gift Foundation fiscal year works on a calendar year. As, of course, as we know, we work on July to July. So we're actually working with them, and we'll have a proposal to them by the end of next week for a $1.2 million grant proposal for calendar year 2020, which will be split 50-50. If that's approved, and we have good reason to think that that will be, that would make Grant-A-Gift's help, make the Ackerman Center essentially break even. But that's not what we are now. On accrual accounting, we have to show the losses as they are. Our other two departments that are problematic are OB-GYN and Ear, Nose, and Throat. As recently as yesterday, I received as requested, plans to turn those finances around. Ultimately, the chairs are responsible for their departments. Both departments are going to have to look at a combination of increasing revenue and, frankly, decreasing expenses. And those things are going to be applied in the next 45 days. And there will be some cuts that will be required. And those will be not painless, but are necessary to get us in the place where we need to be.
Any questions for Dr. Gardner? Thank you, Dr. Gardner. Okay. With that, we're going to go to agenda item number 6, Nevada Mental Health Workforce and Education. Dr. Hunt.
Okay. All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chair Page and committee members, for allowing me to present today and start the conversation on the mental health workforce needs of Nevada. Great. Those are the slides. All right. We're in business. All right. So this is actually a continuation of the conversation from Dr. Packham's presentation to you at your last session. So he was talking about the healthcare professional shortages overall in Nevada. Today, I want to focus solely on mental health. So he had shown us this picture of the map that shows that about 95% of our state's population currently resides in a mental health professional shortage area. And to just back up a little bit, when I talk about mental health workforce, I'm talking about several disciplines: psychiatry, psychology, social work, marriage and family therapists, professional counselors, addictions counselors, school psychologists, psychiatric nurses, psychiatric nurse practitioners, and beyond. So we're talking about a lot of different disciplines here. But also that includes the primary care workforce shortages, because the reality is a lot of mental and behavioral health issues present to primary care first. And so if we have a shortage there, then we're really decreasing the access to mental health care. He also showed us this graph, which indicates the additional number of professionals we would need to add in these specific mental health professions to just reach national average. So, for example, I'm a psychologist. So if we look at the psychology line, the national average indicates that there are 37 psychologists per 100,000. In Nevada, we sit at 13 per 100,000, and Dr. Packham's estimate would be that we need an additional 728 psychologists just to reach national average. And maybe that's not a big deal if we don't have the need for mental health care. But I would argue that's not the case. So we know from state and federal statistics that we have rates of mental health, mental illness, and substance use disorders that are at or above the national average. And just for a reference point, national average is about 1 in 20 adults experience a mental illness. So this isn't just for the adult population, though. We are seeing increased rates of depression in our child and adolescent population. Nevada did not avoid the opioid crisis. We have opioid use disorder in our young adult population. That's double the national average. And when we look at our adult population, we have averages of mental illness that are at national average, but we're significantly underutilizing mental health services for adults. And I would draw you back to that map that says that's probably because we don't have enough mental health professionals to meet this need. So for the past 2 to 3 years, we have been ranked 51st in the nation based on our high prevalence of mental health needs and our low rates of access to care. And I would also just acknowledge that in the past month, the state has put out a health needs assessment from State Department of Health and Human Services. And 15 out of our 17 counties in Nevada identify behavioral health as one of the top 3 health priorities.
Excuse me, doctor.
Yes.
So if we're 51, who would be in the top 10?
That's a great question. So you have some states that are on the East Coast and kind of Midwest that are doing well when it comes to their ranking.
And what are they doing different than what we're doing?
Good question. So I'm going to kind of get into that a little bit here. Okay. So that's a great question. So we have the need. We don't have the professionals to talk about it to meet the need, but I do see there's a lot of conversation going on in our state. So for the past year, I've been tracking the conversation from our policymakers about mental health shortages. So everyone from our governor, who's acknowledging we need to train more mental health professionals, to even our director of Health and Human Services for the state, has actually drawn that connection between reaching out and working with higher education to help build that pipeline for mental health careers and better serve our state. So, and our chancellor has even has been a proponent of building that bridge from K through 12 to higher academics to build workforce populations. So, as I said, there are many states that are facing though this shortage, and some are attacking it very well. And there's one model that I want to talk about today. So in Nebraska, there's a lot of similarities. to Nevada. So they have about 80 to 85% of their population lives in a mental health professional shortage area. If you think about them geographically, they have a large areas of rural frontier areas, tribal lands, and kind of two centralized urban populations, very similar to Nevada. So what they did through collaboration between the legislature and higher education through the Behavioral Health Workforce Act in 2009 is said that we are going to attack this through many ways, but one of them is through higher academics and education. So they, out of this piece of legislature, created the Behavioral Health Education Center of Nebraska, which they pronounce Beacon, not Bacon, which might be appropriate for the Midwest, but it is Beacon. And they said out of Beacon, which will be housed in the University of Nebraska Medical Center, we're going to really attack the workforce development pipeline piece by expanding our educational programs at the higher academic, higher education level. We're also going to reach out and sustain our current workforce by providing them continuing education opportunities. And we're really going to pay attention to tracking data. So they realized that they were struggling to understand how many of each profession that they had, what the need was there, and also, more importantly, to track the trends where they were going in their workforce. And the best part about this, they were funded from their general fund, and they continue, what's more magical is they continue to be funded from their general fund to this date each year with an increase in their funding from the state legislature. So what Beacon said is to build the workforce and mental health, we're going to focus on these three areas. We're going to put a lot of resources to engaging and recruiting, starting that pipeline. So historically in mental health, we have not done a great job of going to the high school level or even earlier and promoting mental health careers. Not like nursing does, not like pre-med, even radiology. We have not shown up there to talk about what mental health careers are. So what they did is they paired it with training on mental health issues. So they would go out to the high schools and talk about depression, strategies for managing anxiety. And if you thought that was interesting and want to learn more about it and work in that field, here's how you go into the Nebraska system of higher education and do that. Then they said, once we've got them in the system and we're training them, we want to expand our training opportunities in higher education for mental health, but we also want to do a mentorship component. So if we've gone out to those rural areas and found high school students that want to get into higher education, study mental health, we're going to pair them with a mental health professional that lives in their home community or home area to be a system of support while they're going through their education, but also hopefully strengthen the tie back to employment in their home communities. So they invested a lot of time and resources into doing that. The other piece that I'll note, which is really important, is they also said at the higher education level, we're also going to expand our training on integrated models of healthcare. By that, they meant we're going to teach our mental health students how to work in primary care settings, embed themselves in primary care settings where they're working with medical colleagues to treat the whole patient, but also increase the access points to mental health care. And they said then it's not enough to recruit, train. We've also got to work on the piece of retaining those graduates in our state then. So they have also done a lot to reach out to the already established workforce in mental health by offering them CE trainings. They also, which I think is a unique aspect, started a behavioral health jobs website. So across Nebraska, anybody, any employer who's hiring any type of mental health professional, they send the ad to this one centralized website that's run out of Beacon. I've included the link there, and you also have a copy of the last legislative report that Beacon submitted with more data and stats. But I will note, in the last week, they just released their newest fiscal year report, so you can access it at their website. So I think this translates to Nevada quite well. Again, I think there's some similarities between our two states. So I am proposing a Nevada Mental Health Workforce Education Network, and I like the concept of a network. When I think of network, I think of a systems of connections. So I would like to see NSHE be kind of the home for this network and connecting out to the employers, policymakers, state entities, community groups. I would even say they need to connect to the health insurers in this state. But we go out and do something similar. We go out and promote our mental health training programs to some specific groups. Again, going down into the school districts, the K-12 programs, reaching out to those undecided undergraduates, those individuals that are enrolled in some of our certificate programs. So I think about the mental health tech certificate program at College of Southern Nevada. And just as part of their training, help them understand that once they're out working as a mental health tech and they enjoy that, they want to go on to higher level of employment in mental health, then here's how you come back to the NSHE system. Here's your entry point, and here's the continued education you can get. Working with Workforce Development Services, so again, providing a lot of support and education to adults that are maybe looking for a career change or unemployed, and making it easy for those that are in entry-level healthcare professions to understand how they can engage the Nevada System of Higher Education to continue their professional development. And I also strongly support the mentoring piece, again, going out and targeting training in those rural areas, those underserved urban areas about mental health professions and connecting those students with mentors in their areas. We could do a lot to expand our – we're going to have to expand our education system, our higher education system training programs. We could do a lot to increase our connection to the already licensed professional workforce. I think the data tracking is really important. As Dr. Packham has referred to before, it's a struggle currently for us to understand exactly how many of each profession we have and what the trends are. So, for example, I would like to see it be where – we have an understanding of in the next 10 to 15 years, we see a large portion of our social workers going to drop out of the workforce for retirement. That should translate back to NSHE. So then how do our programs at UNR and UNLV start to prepare for that? So again, I probably went over my time, but hopefully we've got time for any burning questions or comments that you have. Again, I just see this as an opportunity for NSHE to meet the demand that we have for mental health professionals, as we are the largest supplier of those mental health professionals in the state.
Any questions for Dr. Hunt? Regent McAdoo.
So when you were talking about that, I don't recollect hearing you mention the community health workers program in Nevada.
Yeah.
Who have some type of training in mental health and mental health first aid and provide those, I know specifically in rural communities. So
yes.
I would just like to mention that with your network you're developing, I see that as a piece that would be very helpful, honestly, at least in the rural part of the state.
Yes.
But I also believe that's very active in Clark County and Washoe County.
You're correct.
Okay.
And we've got a couple of great training programs for that in our community college system. And so exactly, those are the professionals. If you're enjoying the work you do, but you want to do something more, again, let's bring you back into the NSHE system
yes.
to continue your education.
So the state of Nevada actually funds 12 coalitions that serve all 17 counties, and they have a very large component of those community health workers, which do that mental health first aid, which
yes.
I come from that career background before I became a regent. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yes.
Thank you.
Dr., quick question for you. Do we have any idea of the number of students that we are putting out every year?
That's a good question. So it depends on the training program. So, for example, in our doctoral program in psychology at UNLV, we enroll about 7 to maybe 10 students each cohort. So that would be kind of what we're producing each year. But then you compare that to something like the marriage and family therapy program, which enrolls about 30 students each cohort. So we would be producing about 30 of those each year. So it depends on the program.
And talking about marriage and family therapists, so it looks like we've got too many, right?
I wouldn't argue that we have too many. I hate to say that we have too many of those. I would rather say, what are they doing that's working well? And I think there's a couple things. If I think about the program here at UNLV, I think they have a great pipeline. They have a family studies undergraduate minor. And I think they recruit well from that undergraduate minor into their master's level program. And then they're doing well with connecting their internships, when those students are doing their internships, to potential employment opportunities in the community. So I think there are lessons to be learned there. But the other thing about marriage and family therapists, though, if you think about in practice, they cannot bill Medicare. So there's, although there may be a lot of them, they're still not meeting all of the needs of our population.
Thank you. Okay. With that, we will go. Thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it. Agenda item number 7, University School of Medicine Faculty Practice Plan, Bylaws, Articles of Incorporation, and Operating Agreement.
Okay. So with this agenda item, UNLV is requesting approval of the revised bylaws, Articles of Incorporation, and Operating Agreement of UNLV Medicine, the faculty practice plan for the UNLV School of Medicine. So just to take you back, the previous set of these were approved by the Board of Regents in March of 2017. So now that operations have been underway for more than 2 years, UNLV and UNLV Medicine found it necessary to update their governing documents to memorialize the party's current practices and to clarify authority and obligations in specific areas. Most importantly, these revised governing documents are consistent with the board's new policy related to associated practice plans, which was adopted at its October 2019 special meeting. So with your approval, the Articles of Incorporation have been revised to remove the Board of Regents as corporate member of UNLV Medicine, which is consistent with the board's new policy. However, in the bylaws, the Board of Regents retain specific powers relating to corporate structure and governance. So, and this revised structure is intended to strengthen kind of the corporate liability shield between UNLV Medicine and the board, by confirming UNLV's medicine's independence and corporate control over the day-to-day management of its business operation. The proposed revisions to the operating agreement are similarly meant to comply with the board's new policy. It serves to outline the roles and responsibilities of UNLV, UNLV School of Medicine, and UNLV Medicine. And more specifically, the agreement makes clarifications in specific category areas like shared services, duties and responsibilities of managing day-to-day operations as a separate entity, shared responsibilities related to affiliations with health systems and hospitals, budget approvals, financial decisions, employment, research, and legal services. So I ask for your approval of these documents to bring them really into compliance with board policy. We do have in the room our general counsel, Elda Sidhu, who worked closely on this, as well as Michael Gardner, if you have more specific questions about the revisions.
I'd like to move for approval.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? Okay, second by Regent McAdoo. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Very exciting to be able to make a motion on an action item other than the minutes in this committee.
I'm not even good at it. I agree. Okay, we're going to go to item number 8, new business. Any new business? Seeing none, we've got agenda item number 9. Sam, that's going out with a bang. We've got agenda item number 9, public comment. Seeing no public comment, this meeting is adjourned.